step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann. And I was pleased to have a brief conversation with George Carl. Of course, he has his new book, Furious George, with Kurt Sampson, and talks about his 40 years in the game as both a player and the coach. And we got a chance to talk a little bit about his playing career with the Spurs, both in the ABA and the NBA in the late 70s. Also, his early coaching career. He coached for two seasons with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who in their first season were 2-19 and managed to rally and make the playoffs with a World Be Free, and then Golden State in the 87 and 88 seasons, where they made the playoffs for the first time in 10 years with Sleepy Floyd, Joe Barry Carroll, Chris Mullin, and then fell apart with trades in the next season. And then, of course, his years in Seattle with Gary Payton, Detlef Schrempf, Sean Kemp, good runs in 92 and 93, including making the Western Conference Finals, then losing early exits in 1994 versus Denver and the Lakers in 95. And then, of course, making the finals in 1996, and also got into the Milwaukee years a little bit, with Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson, Sam Cassell, making the Eastern Conference Finals in 2001. And then, of course, his years in Denver with Carmelo Anthony, Andre Miller, Marcus Camby, and then later, of course, Allen Iverson and Chauncey Billups later coming in, and the Melo years for that team, making the conference finals in 2009. And then after Melo was traded, the more egalitarian team with Andre Miller, Andre Iguodala, Ty Lawson, Gallinari, Fareed, Brewer, those kinds of guys, and having a great season. Then, of course, the more recent stint that didn't go so well in Sacramento. So got a few insights in the conversation. We only had a brief window to be able to do, so we got as much as we possibly could in those 15 minutes. So hopefully you enjoy the listen. Thanks. I wanted to ask you about a little bit about your playing career. How would you describe yourself as a player?
I was probably in the NBA from a standpoint of pro ball. I was probably a hustle player, point guard that liked probably defense more than offense and was better defensively than offense. I could make a good pass, good decision, pretty efficient at times. But I think more than anything in pro basketball, I was more of a role player, a hustle player, a bench player that kind of came into the game and tried to shake the game up a little bit.
How would you compare the you were, of course, in the ABA for a couple of years, then the NBA. How would you compare the league in the 70s with today in terms of the style and quality of play?
Well, you know, I think the ABA days is played the game with the three ball. You know, there's an experiment of shooting the three ball, which the NBA took, I think, the 1978-79 season was the first year we put the three ball in. And that's probably the biggest evolution in the game of basketball over the last 40 years has been the effect and impact of the ABA three ball. And then, of course, being in the NBA. And now we've learned that, you know, analytics tell us that, you know, you got to shoot the three ball. You know, if you're going to be a good team, you got to make threes. And I think in the same sense, we might be overdoing it a little bit. But I think the experiment of expanding the horizon of the three ball is where the game is going.
You mentioned in your book that you were the one player who fought with Pete Maravich. Is there any more of a story behind that?
No. Pete Maravich is actually from Western Pennsylvania, where I grew up, and he was before me a little bit. And I had the opportunity to play. I think I still was in the ABA days when we got in the fight. It was one of those exhibition games between the NBA and the ABA. And the ABA, of course, took those games probably a little more serious. And we wanted to make a statement to the old league that, we can play with you. And so, we might have been a little more in an exhibition game. We'd be pumped up and ready to go. And I think we caught Pete on a bad moment. And, we got into an elbow game. And all of a sudden, some fists threw. And all of a sudden, he was throwing to me, I was throwing to him.
Were there any players that you particularly enjoyed playing with or playing against during your time in the league?
Well, I think it's a great experience. I got the honor to cover George Gervin every day in practice and him destroying me and seeing how a great offensive player can take a good defensive player and totally control them. Over the years, you guys, I've always enjoyed point guard play. Some of the guys, Andre Miller, played for me. Chauncey Billups was a great leader and a great point guard. Gary Payton, of course, is in the Hall of Fame, and he was the reason for many, many wins in Seattle. But I think even in general, I enjoyed Magic Johnson. I've enjoyed guys like Steve Nash and John Stockton and their performance. And Andre Miller was one of my favorite players I've ever coached. I think one of the great passers of all time. And I just enjoy the point guard position, and I think as a coach, I relied upon having a really good point guard.
When your first two stints in the NBA as a coach in Cleveland and Golden State in the 80s, both were similar in respects that you were leading organizations that had been at a tough time. You led them to a season in the playoffs, and the next year things went south a bit. What did you, if any, what lessons did you learn in those stints that helped you succeed later in your career?
Oh, I think early in your career, you're probably a little more on edge. Your ego is a little probably too big, and winning and losing, you kind of fight with everybody. I think I probably understood after a couple episodes that, an organization and a coaching staff and an organization and ownership have to work together. They actually got to be a team that does the game of basketball as a team and works well together. And I think early in my career, I might not have been that character as much as I think I am now, even though I love my challenges. And I think, even as a young coach, I was lucky a little bit more than good.
So you may be best known in your career as coach, of course, of the Seattle Supersonics in the 1990s with Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, Nate McMillan, and those guys. And those teams are probably what many NBA fans first think of when they think of the Sonics. Probably you and those guys are on that list even more than the championship teams of the late 70s. How do you feel about being that important in Sonics history with them not having a team and with kind of the memories frozen in that time?
It still pisses me off, to be honest with you, man. I can't believe the Supersonics in Oklahoma City right now. Those are great years. I was there for 6.5 years, maybe 7 years, and averaged, like someone told me, we averaged 59 wins a season and, had a couple of first round failures. But for the most part, went to the conference finals a couple times, had some great playoff series against Utah, had some great playoff series against the Lakers. And the year we went to the finals, we beat Houston, the team that won championship for 2 years, and we swept them. And then probably maybe my favorite series of all time is the Utah series that went to a seventh game in the Western Conference in 96. And, it came down to Sean Kemp got fouled with 28 seconds to go in the game, made two free throws. Karl Malone got fouled with 10 seconds to go in the game, and he missed two free throws.
It's pretty easy, I think, for people to forget that, the West was really stacked with some very good teams, during the 90s. And, the Sonics were among the best for most of that decade. I mean, you had the Blazers still going pretty well in the early 90s. Of course, the Rockets, the Jazz, the Spurs all had excellent teams for, you'd be able to make that finals and make those deep runs was a, pretty stout accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, it was the Western Conference, I think, was evolving into that in the fast break conferences. And I think, the West seemingly always has played a little bit faster than the East. And there are some great teams in the West. You forgot Phoenix in there. Phoenix went to the finals 1 year with Barkley and Kevin Johnson. And you know, Kevin Johnson and Charles Barkley and Dan Marley, that's a pretty damn good basketball team.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the playoff disappointments, of course, against Denver in 94 and then lost to the Lakers in 95. What, if anything, changed to help you guys reach the finals in 1996?
Well, the upset in the first year to the Lakers was we played every game in Tacoma, which is almost, we had an 82-game road trip. So I'll put a little asterisk behind that with an excuse. Losing to Denver was we got fed up. You know, we got a little bit into the expectation game. We had the best record in the NBA that year. And, you know, we thought we were going to cruise control. And, you know, Denver came back from a 2-0 deficit, surprised us, and then in game five, they played a great game that they beat us in overtime. But, you know, we could have played better. We should have won that game in three or four instead of it going five, because in game five, they played a pretty special game. And if you go back and look at that film, they were good. I mean, we could have probably been better, but they were pretty damn good.
So you moved on in the early 2000s to the Milwaukee Bucks, made the Eastern Conference Finals in 2001 with Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson, Sam Cassell being the big three. Of course, that Eastern Conference Finals, definitely one where a lot of tough calls that didn't go your way in that series. What happened there, and why was the team unable to sort of follow up in the success the next season despite having a similar cast?
I don't know if you remember or not. We made a trade. I mean, we signed a free agent. We thought it was going to be the guy that got us over the hump, and he was the guy that kind of got us, you know, we kind of started falling apart a little bit. We signed Anthony Mason as a free agent. Anthony was an all-star the year before it was the Miami Heat. And we thought he was the guy, he was the piece we needed. And it did not work out. And, again, chemistry and character and being able to come together as a team. For whatever reason, bad coaching, you know, players are resenting each other, whatever the reason at that moment, that team, because of that trade, probably broke apart more than come together.
You wrote about when you came to Denver in the mid 2000s. Of course, there was the challenges with coaching Carmelo Anthony, and you talk about the AAU culture of I think the AAU babies, that as you refer to them, with Kenyon and J.R. Smith. When Iverson came to that team, how did you feel about him coming in and the challenge? You know, obviously both are offensively gifted players, but not necessarily committed to defense, and that seems like maybe not naturally the best fit together. How did you approach that combination?
Well, I think, as a coach, our job is to build the system around the strengths of your team, and that strength, of course, with Melo and AI, two guys who can get 30 any night they play. You know, we had to be an offensive-oriented team, but, my whole thing in that time with them playing together was I wish we would have had maybe a little better point guard play. You know, I just think having two scorers like that, having a control on them would have been helpful along with me and coaching the game. I think sometimes a little higher class of point guard. We basically were playing for, I think, with backup point guards most of that time. And when we finally made the trade of trading Allen Iverson for Chauncey Billups, it was a joy because we went right that year. We made that trade. We went to the, went to the Western Conference Finals. And then the next year was the year I thought we were really ready to win. And that was the year I came down with cancer and had to leave the team at the end of the season.
So after Mel left the team, you were able to you obviously brought in some good players like Gallinari and Chandler, and I think you wrote in the book that the season where you won 57 games, went 38-3 at home, was the most fun that you had in your career. What in particular was so enjoyable about that team?
Well, no one expected us. I mean, I think at one time in the beginning of January, we were 17-15. In the second half of the season, our team just really came together. We were pretty unbeatable at home. And the altitude, the way we played fast. We had a team of 9 or 10 guys that played every night. You know, we had kind of a rotating big man lineup, and you never knew who was going to finish the game. And I thought we trusted each other and believed in each other more than most NBA teams do. I mean, our guys, you know, they were good in the gym. They were good in the film room. They were good in preparation. And no one expected us to have that type of year. They kind of like we played with a chip on our shoulders because no one gave us our due. And then right at the end of the season, Gallo tore his knee up, had an ACL, and actually Ty and Kenneth Fareed actually were hurt a little bit going into the playoffs against a team called the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. And that was the season where Steph had his kind of coming out party. He had two or three really special games where he lit us up and they upset us in the first round.
Yeah, you guys were kind of the darlings at that point, just, you know, with an exciting play and everything. And the Warriors kind of stole that thunder a little bit and then kind of eventually kind of made that part of their identity. And, of course, have had the success that that they've had. I don't know if you've ever thought about that.
Well, you know, I think, again, if we would have kept that team together and added one more shooter and stayed healthy, I thought we could have been a 50-win team for many, many more years ahead.
Mm-hmm. Last question. Of course, your most recent coaching stop was in Sacramento, and a lot, you know, has been made about your relationship with DeMarcus Cousins and, you know, the challenges of coaching him. Obviously, he's had a lot of challenges with a lot of different coaches. Do you think if you'd have had more time with him, you would have been able to kind of have the, you know, the trust that you needed to have with him, or was that just going to be a really, you know, difficult challenge?
All I know is I thought DeMarcus had a good year for us last year, and he's having a great year this year. So if I'm a little piece of him improving his career from a standpoint, I mean, right now you're seeing the best big guy in basketball, and his numbers, you know, his numbers are unbelievable. He plays all aspects of the game. I think the only one thing that I think right now is going on in the NBA game is what does the coach want from his center? And what I love about DeMarcus right now is he does everything. He can play outside, he can play inside. He can be a playmaker for you. He's a pretty damn good defensive player in the pick and rolls. And I think right now he's blowing up right in front of us.
Thanks again to George Karl for being on the program. Of course, exciting for us to have a former NBA coach with so much experience to be on our program. And I do recommend checking out his book, Furious George. I know there were a lot of much was made of some of the controversial statements that he made in the book, but there's a lot of really interesting stuff about the NBA during the 80s and 90s and 2000s that I think is insightful and worth learning about. So I do give that book a recommendation. So everyone, of course, can check us out at the Step Back at fansided.com, and you can search for Over and Back on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. You'll probably find us there. So follow us also on Twitter, Facebook by following at Over and Back NBA. So thanks for listening. We're back again soon.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.